Well, today, the 3rd of February, marks the 100th anniversary of one of the most famous and significant prison breaks in Irish history. It was on that day, in 1919, that three prominent Irish nationalists, Éamon de Valera, Sean Milroy and Sean McGarry, escaped from Lincoln Jail in England. They had been imprisoned for their part in the alleged German plot conspiracy against the British, which was, of course, just a pretense to put away troublesome Republican leaders. We're going to hear first from Ian McGarry, longtime director and producer for RTE Television, and also a nephew of one of the escapees, Sean McGarry.
My uncle, Sean McGarry, was one of the three who escaped from Lincoln Jail on the 3rd of February 1919. He was born in 1886, a few years before my father Harry, so I was something of a late arrival. The family was from Dundrum. Sean was involved in the 1916 Rising and was sent to Frongoch internment camp in Wales, but was eventually released. He was a longtime senior member of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and he served as its president from May 1917 until November 1918, when he was one of a number of nationalist leaders arrested as part of the so-called German plot and sent to Lincoln Jail. My uncle Sean McGarry's wife, my aunt, played an important role in the escape. There's various versions of this story. They managed to send her a postcard which contained a sketch of the key, allowing a copy to be made in Ireland. It was also her who baked a cake with a key inside that was sent to the prisoners. I first learned about my family connection to the escape as a teenager when my own father mentioned it very briefly in passing. He never went into great detail, as he didn't like to discuss anything to do with the war.
Right, that was our very own Ian McGarry there. I have to say, I know Ian very well. I had no idea that he was related to Sean McGarry. Total revelation to me. I hope Ian is doing well. Recalling the role there that his family played in the escape from Lincoln Jail on the 3rd of February 1919. To talk some more about this, I'm joined in studio by Micheál O'Divlin, historian and publisher of the Kilmainham Tales series of books. Micheál, you're very, very welcome indeed.
Thank you.
Take us back to the reason why these three were in jail in the first place, the German plot, so-called German plot of 1918.
Well, it's the so-called German plot. Basically, they were linked to a plot with the Germans to join with them to help to overthrow Britain. That was the so-called story. This document had come out of Dublin Castle, had been perhaps sexed up a little bit by the Republicans, but the British used it as an excuse to arrest all of the leaders, or most of the leaders. But what they actually arrested were the doves rather than the hawks. People like de Valera, who would have been more inclined towards a political settlement if at all possible, leaving out the much more radical people like Collins, who were quite prepared to use physical force.
People like Harry Boland as well.
Yes, absolutely. Harry Boland, hugely important.
And this is one of the reasons why so many of the members of the First Dáil were not present, that they were Féglasa Gáilimh on the 21st of January.
Yes, or
19,
on the run.
Or on the run, exactly, yeah. Now, the planning was quite complicated. It's full of cinematic tropes.
Yeah.
And the key in the cake is obviously of major importance. Tell us, first of all, a little bit about the operation. Who planned the operation to begin with?
It originated within the jail. They wanted to get out. It is alleged that de Valera wanted to escape before he was released for his own political reasons and for propaganda purposes. So the prisoners decided that they would organise an escape, and they reached out. But of course, on the outside, there was an escape being planned as well. So the two matched very, very closely together. The problem was, like a lot of these things, communication. And I mean, this story—it's such an incredible one, with all of the, as you say, all of the classics of a good escape story there. they send out coded messages, which are not at first understood, takes time to understand them. Replies are sent in, there's communication, cross-communication, missed communication indeed, on one occasion. The very first communication was a postcard, a Christmas card with a cartoon on it. I'm actually looking at a copy of it here.
Apparently completely innocent.
Totally innocent. You look at this, it's a rather badly drawn cartoon of a drunken Sean McGarry outside his house trying to get in. And he says, it looks like the keyhole has shrunk. And his key is there, and it's a ginormous key. And the smaller illustration beside it of him sitting in a prison cell, it says, Christmas 1918, can't get out. And he's looking at this giant keyhole. But what they actually are is a perfect drawing of the key and of the keyhole that he needed to use it.
But nobody got it originally.
There are a couple of reasons for this. So one is the astonishing fact that one key opened every lock in Lincoln Jail, including the outer doors. So hard to realise that you're being sent out the key to the jail, basically. One of the problems with this, of course, was that the operation of a key was simple. All the prison guards during the day, when they're locking a cell or locking a gate, would simply turn the key once. But at night, under lockdown, they turned it twice. And this put extra pressure on any key going in. It had to fit obviously various different keyholes, so you needed a specific size key. And this was what they were trying to indicate when they sent this out. It was sent to Father Kavanagh, who passed it on eventually to Mr. McGarry, but then it went on eventually to Collins, who, as I said, he was the one who finally twigged there was something in it. It wasn't just an innocent Christmas card. Realised what it was, and they got a key made to the specifications.
Did it work?
Well, the key had been made. The original drawing was made from a wax casting that Eamon de Valera had made of the prison keys. He used to serve mass in the prison, and the chaplain was pretty careless about his keys, really, just leaving them on a table in the sacristy.
And his candle wax, obviously, as well.
Yes. So he stole the butts of candles, melted them down into a cigarette box, cut a notch in it to allow the key to go in, and when he got a chance, he used to carry it next to his chest to keep it soft, stuck the key into it, took a perfect mould of it, and went away. He then traced it, gave it to, he was copied then onto the card and sent off to, eventually to Ireland, reaching Collins, and they made a key to match that. The problem was, as De Valera reckoned later, was that when the wax cooled, it shrank. So the key was slightly too small.
Right.
While perfect, it was small. So when they put it in the lock, they tested it, and it snapped. Now, they had a problem getting it out again. Of course, they couldn't leave it there, but they did get out a piece of wire. So they sent a second cartoon, this time a much more Celtic design with the key hidden inside that.
Sorry, I mean, this is absolutely hilarious.
Oh,
so the authorities didn't get it.
I mean, if you wrote this down, nobody would
believe you. No, absolutely not.
Nobody would believe you. But it happened.
Is it any wonder we won the Anglo-Irish War?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the first key, when you think about it, the first key was brought in, it was baked by Mr. McGarry, as we've heard. Fintan Murphy brought it in to the jail. And he just went up, knocked on the wicket gate, asked for the warder, and said, look, I'm a commercial traveller. Somebody gave me this to give in. And he wouldn't take it. He called down the head warder. He came out, stuck a knife into the key, into a couple of spots, and took it in, and it went in. That's how the first key got in. So you think, okay, they'll be wise to this one. But the second key, they made two keys, basically, on the second one. Liam McMahon's housekeeper, Mrs. Sullivan, is alleged to have made this one. But Frank Kelly took this in.
Now, who was Frank Kelly?
Frank Kelly, he just came in, he knocked on the door. He said exactly the same thing as the first time. And
nobody thought this was unusual, or this was odd, bizarre, or strange.
From strangers.
Cakes arriving at a jail.
There were a couple of things, of course. I mean, you had rationing in England at this time, still post-war. Yet the prisoners were allowed parcels from Ireland. Mm. So they were actually being fed, allegedly, better than the prison guards. They were also smuggling in alcohol. Which is an important part of the story.
We'll come to that because yes. We have, you mentioned Frank Kelly. Frank Kelly was working in the Sinn Féin office in Dublin. We have Frank Kelly from the RTE archives sent over to England to assist with the escape. And here he describes how the complex operation came about.
A postcard was received. It was drawn by Sean Milroy and showed two pictures. On the left-hand side was a picture of Sean McGarry, drunk, hat on the back of his head, trying to get his latchkey to fit the door of his house. On the other side was Sean McGarry sitting in a cell very despondently, and the caption was, Sean McGarry can't get out. This was sent to the family and was shown around as a good joke, and it wasn't until Collins saw it that he recognised that there might be something in it, because the key was a full-sized key, although Sean McGarry was only a little man, and he thought that it was possibly a drawing of the key of a cell, which it was. There were several keys. That one went in and was a failure. In the end, blanks were sent in, blank keys, and files were sent in a cake. And a key was made by Delockery of Kilkenny. He made a master key that opened all locks in the jail.
That's Peter Delockery of Kilkenny. That was the voice of Frank Kelly there from the RTE archives. Now, famously, the key worked and they were able to get out of their cells, etc., etc. But obviously they then had the problem of the three of them getting out of the jail itself. Yeah. And famously, De Valera, in order to effect his escape, was dressed as a woman. And this is where the story for me gets even more bizarre, because De Valera was what? He was 6'1", 6'2",
somewhere around that.
There or thereabouts. He was a tall man. How in the name of God was a 6 foot tall, 6 foot plus man able to convince prison warders that he was a woman?
He didn't. They walked out very carefully, locking all the gates behind them as they went. They got out of the yard. The exit, the wicket gate, the gate they were coming out was at the back of the jail, and they came out to that. They got out in darkness. They had specifically chosen the night when there would be little or no moonlight for this. This was important to them. And they got out to the gate. And the problem was that Harry Boland and Michael Collins were outside. They had to signal to them. And again, it's where all of this goes bizarre. They'd had to signal with a flashlight. The flashlight came on but wouldn't turn off, so it wasn't a flash. And Harry Boland had to stuff it into his pocket and try to turn it off in there. Anyway, they got out. Collins, in a little bit impatient, tried a second key that he had in the outer door. There were two doors. And his key broke.
Okay. So they've now got that key is now stuck in the lock.
And they shout to Dev that the key is stuck in the door. So Dev, they have the choice, go back or go on. So Dev decides to go on. He opens the inner door and then decides to try his key in the outer door. And as luck would have it, it pushed the broken piece out.
Okay.
And he gets out. Now, at this stage, he's still dressed as a man, believe it or not. I think where the dress as a woman story comes from is when they get out, they're walking down. They have to walk down to get a taxi. And they come past some soldiers who are back from the war recuperating, and the soldiers are there with their girlfriends. And they reckon they're not going to get past them. So Harry Boland was dressed in a fur coat with a big ruff on it and coat, etc. And he took it off. And he put it on to Dev.
Right.
Now, on Harry, it would have been a long coat. On Dev, of course, a shorter. But Harry was, what, about 5'8"? He was a hell of a lot smaller. And he linked Dev and leaned into him as if they were a couple.
Right.
And this is right.
This
they
is
walk
the myth,
past
if you like. This,
it is. I think it's a myth propagated by the film.
He's a woman. Now, interestingly, Collins, it's, you know, Collins happy to spring Dev from Lincoln Jail. It's incredibly embarrassing for the British authorities. Yes. But he doesn't want Dev back in Ireland. He wants him out of the country.
I would think, yes. Dev served his purpose. Harry was, Michael Collins was very happy to have Dev in jail as a martyr and to defer to. Now, bear in mind, of course, they were best friends. Mm. You know, they really were good friends at this time. But he was quite happy to have him in prison as a martyr while he propagated a war outside. However, with Dev back, Dev was obviously going to try and change things around to his way again. So Yes, some 6 months later, Dev goes off to the States, where he spends his time fundraising, speaking, trying to get support, etc., out there.
Falls out with John Devoy and Daniel Cotton and Friends of Irish Freedom.
And goes with Boland as well, the love interest, the conflicting love interest. But no, he goes out, and yes, he has problems out there. And eventually, he decides he wants to come back, and Collins keeps saying, not yet, not yet.
Raise more money, raise more money.
Yes, please do. Stay out of my way. I'm running a very successful war here. Okay.
It's an amazing story. Yeah, it's a bizarre and incredible story, but it's a true story. Michael, thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed, Micheál O'Devlin, for joining us. And Micheál, as I mentioned, is the publisher of the Kilmainham Tales series of books. And you can learn more at the website kilmainhamtales.ie.